McLaren 7 of the MotoGP World Championship is underway.
Look at Bautista, didn't get away well.
Oh. Down he goes, and he is selected as the championship leader. We talked about the possibility of a crash with the second race in succession.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 326 for Wednesday, the 4th of July, 2012. And my name is Jules Cisek. I'm here with Jim Race. And happy 4th, Jim.
Happy 4th to you. We should have a little sound effects of fireworks or something, but since the 4th is a holiday. Well done. And that one actually sounded much better than last week.
Yeah, thanks. So for those of you who are out, not in the States, we're going to be firing off, blowing things up and waving flags tomorrow.
Yeah. Parades and all that kind of stuff. In the meantime, there was lots of blowing things up and flag waving going on over this last weekend. Another double weekend. These things just kill me, Jules. Kind of wears you out. You know, if they were happening on the American continent, I'd be fine. or frankly in Asia, but no worries anyway. We got a lot to talk about, don't we?
We do. So we have just a little bit of an errata from last week when we were talking about the 250 riders that moved it to four-stroke MotoGP. We forgot one name. It's kind of borderline. Marco Melandri, I think, deserves to be in that group of people who are successful.
True.
To some degree, because he did. His first season was pretty awful. His second season, he had two podiums. His third season, he finished second in the championship.
Yep, it was actually quite the season. In fact, even in 2006, despite some injuries, he still had a pretty damn good season. So
yes, yep.
And I should mention, by the way, we did have a donator last week. Thank you very much to Richard Glover. I believe he's donated before. Very, very cool.
Yeah. And written in.
Yeah. There was an error that I made, although I think I still have a little asterisk behind it, Jules. You pointed out that I was saying that CRTs might not mind starting from the back if they had to use an extra engine or an engine beyond the allocation. You're right. They start from pit lane. They have to wait 10 seconds. That 10 seconds kind of makes a difference depending upon where the start finishes at the track.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that Aragon was a perfect time for Rossi to take that seventh engine because actually the pit lane is so close to the,
right,
to the first corner that by the time the bikes got there, you know, 10 seconds had almost passed already. So
exactly. And then I kind of put in parentheses, I'm like, well, for some CRT teams, you know, that may still not be much of a handicap.
Right.
but we'd have to see. Twitter was ablaze a bit after our last show. I'll have you know, Jules, on the way to me right now, I've got a t-shirt with this on it. You want to roll into these? Because I know you compiled them.
Yes. So on Facebook, we had Lawrence I. He said that he tried the question. That we had last week, which is what would an alien do on a CRT, and he actually managed to go and ask a bunch of people, and he got four responses, one from Melissa, his friend Melissa, dare I ask, and from Ron, isn't cathode ray tubes just a bit primitive for them? Gary said, not if it's food for them,
which is funny.
I love that. And then Brad, who obviously got it, was, it would be interesting to see what one could do with a day on one.
Yep. So, yes, right. I've got a t-shirt with that. It doesn't even have a Motopod logo on it coming. I'll be sporting that at Laguna, and we'll see.
Nice.
We'll see if anybody goes, huh.
Love it.
Maybe
I'll
see if I can get the aliens to sign it, and we'll give it away on the show.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
What else? Carlos Perez, we had a lot of talk, a lot of response and feedback, Jules, because we were talking we kind of flew off the cuff about, what the next American rider to go to GP might be. And we threw out a bunch of names and, more than a few people, Carlos Perez, Sheldon Gooby, on and on and on. They all said, well, we forgot to mention Josh Herron. And they're absolutely right. Josh definitely has shown this year, and there was kind of a question mark going into this season, if he was going to be able to make the adaptation from the DSB bikes to the superbikes. And he's done quite well, and he's been pushing his teammate Josh Hayes pretty hard. So I think he's definitely a candidate should things work out. We'll have to see. You know,
yeah, he's 21 years old, which means he's got plenty of racing ahead of him. And it was Bryce Mitchell that actually pointed out that one of the biggest things he has going for it is to have Josh Hayes as a teammate.
Right. I'm trying to think. Josh and I have talked about this before, about where Heron is going to go, but I think that was off the record. And no, but it was positive talk. I know I kind of blazed through that, but we did. I just want to point out to all you guys out there that yes, you all kind of came back with the same thing. You did mention Josh Heron, and we want to give props to Josh because he is having a great season so far.
Yep.
And he's been looking good. So both of the Joshes, obviously. Let's carry on, Jules.
Okay, Matt Sealis wrote on Facebook, asked the question, is Vinales the real deal or what? How do you think he compares the talent-wise to Marquez? Is he the real deal? Yeah, absolutely, because he's very consistently up there, so that's a trademark, 2 years in a row now. As far as comparing him to Marquez, I think it's actually maybe too early, because he does kind of remind me of Marquez in resolve and skill
combined,
you know, that kind of combination. When Marquez was racing 125s,
yep,
a few years back, but you know, I mean, the comparisons will be difficult to make because they're different guys, and you know, just because they're Spanish and win races doesn't make them very similar.
True. Well, I mean, if you want a similarity, one thing that kind of struck me, and it didn't strike me until today or maybe yesterday, was that all the guys on the top of this box this weekend, what is the one thing they have in common?
They all won the races.
Repsol.
What's Vinales' connection to Repsol?
He's got a Repsol backing too.
Does he?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. I mean, I was thinking that, but then I was like, no, Vinales has been Blue Sands and no. Paris Hilton. All right. Cool.
I knew that was going to come up at some point.
You'll never live that one down.
No.
Poor Vinales.
Yeah. Well, wait, I want to wait till he gets older and actually can discuss it.
Right.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Even more stuff. And this is a question that keeps getting asked, and I've got my own thoughts on it. But let me see. Two folks, Josh Allen-Davis and Russ Jones, were both wondering if there may be team orders at HRC. Part of it was the ease in which Stoner, you know, passed Danny, given the situation with Lorenzo. Jules strongly doubts it. I do, too. I don't see that going on in that garage.
No, I mean, think about.
Think about 2006.
Well, yeah, if there's that, but besides that, there's no reason for it.
Mm-mm.
You know,
not yet, certainly.
And neither Puig nor Supo, who I guess are probably the most, I don't know, influential power guys in there, are not gonna go for that.
Nope. You know? I don't see it happening either. It's just not. It's not necessarily their style, really.
And obviously, we'll talk more about the race, but that ease with which Stoner passed Pedrosa was a very, very calculated move by Stoner, and the combination of Danny's kind of trademark, unfortunately, fade.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely. Let's keep going. We've got lots of listener stuff here, don't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
Go for it.
All right. Hanif Dawson says, longtime listener since the beginning, and which is a long time, 326 ago. Wow. currently leading the MCN Fantasy Moto Pod League. I didn't verify that, Jules. Did you check?
Yes.
yeah, and he is. Yep.
Yes.
All right. So, Hanif, good for you. So obviously I know what I'm talking about, which made me laugh. And what I'm about to profess or prophesize should be printed on tablets. Yeah, you could always be cocky when you're at the top. I've seen that happen before. I believe Marco and his crew has really put some input into that BMW. We're talking about World Superbike right now.
And Marco Melandri.
Yep. And with finally a second consecutive year on the same team, they will win the championship next year. Of course, it's very far away, but realistically, I think other manufacturers have to be thinking already for 2013, possibly thinking which MotoGP dropout they could pick up and become the next World Superbike star next to the current crop who is beating all the regular superbikers. I think, and this is his opinion, he says, I think Alex Espargaro would be perfect, similar to Simoncelli when he ventured over as a guest. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah, I definitely agree that Melandri and, well, I don't think it's Melandri's doing. I think the BMW was just a matter of time before they started winning races and actually challenged for the championship.
Yep.
But it's a great pairing between Melandri and BMW. He seems to really get it and is making really good use for it.
I agree. What we see coming, you know, there's an awful lot that can happen, and we know silly season started early, and silly season is still going on right now. I would not be at all be surprised to see one or two riders move down to World Superbike, one or two riders move up from World Superbike, or up from Moto 2, or move from World Superbike to Moto 2. Who knows? So Hanif, we're going to have that inscribed on a tablet. It's an HP playbook that we picked up off of eBay for $35. So,
All right.
So there you go. We'll take a doctored photo of it and get that right off to you. Carry on, Jules.
Ian Woodward wrote, this was actually a very interesting email. He says, my questions revolve around the ongoing development of riders. In professional sports, even the very best have coaches. Take Tiger Woods or Andy Murray as examples. Yet I've never heard about rider coaches. Does this ever happen? Or is it assumed that once they are in MotoGP 2-3, World Superbikes, BSB, etc., they know everything? Is this done using the technology or telemetrics of a bike by engineers? Or do they ever go back to school and reinforce their skills? Enthusiasts and amateurs rave about California Superbike School. Is there a closed-door equivalent for the professional rider? Would love to hear your thoughts about this apparent lack of opportunity for someone to make small but significant steps forward in their performance. Absolutely, there are absolutely coaches, and both on the training, physical training, and the actual writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, probably guys like Colin Edwards, Nicky Hayden, Rick, Valentino Rossi are not going to be getting trained up for road racing, but they are all doing motocross, and they're riding around with trainers. I know. I mean, and a lot of these guys go back to Keith Code and do laps with him as well.
That's true.
So, you know, it goes on. I think that the training never stops, and there's many different areas in which coaches are involved. Like I said, you know, fitness, food,
everything,
bicycling, yeah. And riding coach, actual riding coaches. There's very different disciplines that they, I mean, some of these guys play around with carts, some of them play with on the dirt, supermoto.
Yeah,
definitely.
Obvious thing is you're always learning, and there's always something you can do just a little bit better. And especially if you find yourself a little bit mired or in a rut. That's when a lot of these guys will take that opportunity to get somebody else's eyeballs on them. Somebody hopefully impartial and third party.
Right.
Because they hear a lot of shit from the people they work with.
Nice.
All right. You know, we did, I'm not sure when we should put this in here, Jules, I guess right before the World Superbike stuff. We do have an interview for this week that Martin grabbed for us on Tuesday afternoon. Very cool. Had a bit of a chat with our friend James Whittam out of British Eurosport. In the meantime, Jules, take yourself a deep breath, grab yourself a little sip of anything that might be cold about you, because we're about to talk racing.
Before we do that, let's just go very quickly with news. Sachsenring signed contract until 2016, which is an amazing turnaround, because last year towards the end of the year, it looked like Sex Hammer might not even renew a contract for this year.
True.
So it's good news for the German racetrack over there. My guess is that there's not that many racetracks out there that could be, you know, FIM approved for MotoGP. You know, the Nürburgring has that.
Corner. You're saying Germany specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Germany. Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry. And
Hockenheim has been gutted. So.
Yeah, Hockenheim has been gutted. So it'd be very tricky, and they want a German round, and the Sachsenring is available, and obviously pulled their shit together to be able to host the thing, and that's a pretty hefty contract. We obviously talked about a lot about contracts last year. I mean, last show, yeah. And you know, this is a 4-year extension basically, so it's pretty good.
True, very true. What else do we have going on? There's a couple of different things.
We should mention, because it happened the day we recorded the show last week, and I actually meant to stick something in there, but then I was like, nah, I don't want to do it by myself, because there was that appeal from
true,
the Ponce team in Moto 2, and it finally got dismissed by the FIM, and now there's no more. The appeal process, I think, is done.
I'm pretty sure. I think it, there's
actually. They can't keep taking it to higher and higher courts, quote unquote. But I don't think they will. I think they're done.
No, and at a certain point, it might start looking silly. To be honest.
Yep. Exactly.
Especially, you know, with back to back races like this, it's like, what do you want to focus on? You want to focus on the racing? You want to focus on a process?
Right.
Yep. What else is going on?
There are a couple of interesting FIM rule changes. True. That were announced at Assen.
Very much so.
I'm just going to do the ones that were really interesting. The effective January 1st, 2013, rookie riders will be permitted to entered by a factory team. Surprise, surprise.
Yep.
And then you made a very good point, which is, does this mean that rookies get no winter testing until the new year?
Which will be weird. That will put them at a disadvantage, but hopefully they've thought about that and made provisions. I'm thinking maybe, I don't know. But then again, they like to put things right at the first of the year. So I don't know. We'll see.
This is a very, very strange one. Effective immediately. Well, that's strange. I don't quite get it, but effective immediately, machines entered into the MotoGP class are restricted to using unchanged bore and stroke dimensions throughout 2012. 2014. Does that mean that the current design can't change for 3 years?
Well, what I'm trying to figure out, I mean, because we know that, for example, Ducati's got a new engine that's supposed to come in at Laguna.
Yeah.
Does that mean that that engine configuration is out the window, or is there a date when they actually have to make this declaration, and that's not clear? You know what I mean?
Yeah. They did say this is directly out of the press release.
And they said effective
the current dimensions
and effective immediately.
Yeah, effective immediately, and the current dimensions must be notified to the technical director.
I think what they're trying to do is save teams money. But if they decide to put a code freeze, Jules.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Exactly.
Use our terminology on hardware without any advanced notification. I think that's bullshit. So I think they have.
Well, this was there was a sit down at Assen,
right? But that means that there was at least one team that was not very happy about the whole thing, and maybe more. Yep. Well, also think about. Well, I don't know. The CRT bikes would necessarily be changing, bore and stroke, but we can damn well bet there's a couple of other teams that probably would have liked to. But there's no doubt that it probably will save them a little bit of money. Not a lot, because all they'll do is try and figure out where else to spend the money.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. And then who's to say, for example, that if Ducati's going to come in with another engine that doesn't have the same bore and stroke and just a different configuration? Who knows? We'll have to see. Not a whole lot else we're going. You did have a question, because there was a minor change to the regulations regarding Moto 3 parts supply. Make sure that upgrades are available to all entries at the same time. You were curious what they're talking about, engine upgrades, and I'm pretty sure, yeah. And that's important because they're allowed to, you know, make these kind of changes in Moto 3 for the fact that they, you know, they've got a whole bunch of different engine configurations.
Right.
I can't believe there was...
So you're saying like the KTM main team, if they get a new engine, they have to make it available to all the other KTM teams.
Exactly. And yeah. This is actually really important, you know, in the first year of development, because they're going to be changing stuff all the time.
Exactly.
And so the upgrades are basically, okay, shit, that didn't work. Here's what we're doing now.
Right.
Couple other little things. One machine rule out. Banning the use of non.
Well, for MotoGP.
Yeah,
for MotoGP. We have Moto 2, obviously, and Moto 3.
Banning the use of non-ferrous, i.e., carbon discs in MotoGP, rejected.
Yep.
Mandating a use of wheels with a standard specification for strength and durability. Nobody really knows exactly what that means. So until they figure it out between the factories and the wheel suppliers, nothing's happening.
Yep. So they postpone that until later.
Yep. They'll figure it out. It was kind of interesting, Jules, and I forgot to put this in the notes, but yesterday it was the World Superbike guys tried out 17-inch wheels.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And they found out that they made no difference. They were just as fast anyway.
Just about as quick, yeah. It was interesting because Chek and Giuliano were way down in 9th and 10th. But they seem to be happy with it. So we'll save that for later. All right. Are we talking racing now? Because I'm getting tired.
So let's start with Assen, and because we always go in this order, we're going to start with Moto 3, which just happened to be the best race of the weekend.
It was a ding-dong battle.
By freaking far.
Yep.
But, it started with QP. Sandro Cortesi was on pole. Danny Kent, which is his teammate, was second. And Niccolo Antonelli was third. No Maverick Vinales in the front row. In fact, he was on the back, in the sixth spot on the second row. Hector Faubel had a good qualifying, was fourth. Nicolas Ayo was fifth, and so on. Didn't really matter because the race for first, I think, was about 20 riders for pretty much half the race, at least.
It was a pack of bumblebees.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm actually going to change the class is not Vuvuzela, dude. It's a dogfight. It's like Spitfires and BF-109s in battle.
I prefer a cat. I prefer a cat fight.
Well, no, cat fight would be too whiny.
I know what you mean. A lot of swooping and diving. The one interesting thing that the guys are still able to pull off on the 250s, much like they were with the 125s, is that it seems like they still have the capability of fitting those bikes anywhere into the smallest of improbable spots. You're like, really? Did you just pull that off?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And this is again, this was a race that's hard to describe lap by lap. Let's just say it was
off the hook.
Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. You know, pretty much to the end, we had six riders vying for first by the start of the last lap, and they were down to four eventually. We had a photo finish, and Danny Kent, and I think Danny Kent and Sandro Cortesi pushed the limits of their team's
patience.
Although I read afterwards that the team was actually fine with it, and that because Kent looked a little bit upset with Cortesi, but it turns out afterwards he said, "Yeah, you know, I mean, it was a tough fight, but we have a lot of mutual respect, and I really enjoyed the race."
Well, the bottom line is, it's hard to be completely unhappy when you get on the box, and Danny hasn't been on the box in a long time.
Yeah,
and so. In fact, I'm trying to think, you know, obviously it was probably Bradley Smith was last time on a 125 on the box. I don't think Danny's been on the podium since then, has he? I don't know. The Brits are probably going to get on me again.
but it was funny because during the race, Casey Stoner was tweeting as he was watching the race at the track. that that Cortese should get some kind of a penalty or hand slapping, you know, some kind of a warning for his aggressive writing, which I thought was interesting. That because you know, Casey Stoner doesn't have issues with people being aggressive.
Casey's funny on Twitter, man.
He is.
He turns into a bit of a fanboy. Or just a fan, which is cool. You know, hey, look, dude's human.
So what happened at the end is because we should go over the last couple of corners. So first of all, Luis Salom was the guy that last year at Assen blew my mind. And I remember Edwin Hauser told me, like, watch this guy. And I did. And, I think he says he should be renamed. His nickname should be Slalom, because he really does, like, you know, he does take some strange lines. He kind of messed it up going into the chicane, and Maverick Vinales was able to get the win by almost a second, even though they were much much closer going into the chicane. But what happened between Salom and Kent and Cortese was, I mean, it looked like all three went across the line at the same time. It turned out when they had a still photo from the top, that Cortese definitely had second.
Right.
But there was so much confusion that it was Kent and Salom that ended up in the Parc Fermé with Vinales. And then they had to ask Salom to leave, which is so harsh.
This was a very weird weekend in Parc Fermés around the world, wasn't it?
Yeah. The smaller classes. Anyway, the photo finish between Kent and Salom was actually marked down to 0.001/1000 of a second, but it was probably even less.
Yeah.
And I read a very interesting article about the photo finish cameras, because we had in the USA Olympic track trials, we had an actual tie where the photo finish was completely showed the two runners. It was the woman's I should know this because I wrote it down somewhere, but I can't pull it up right now. But anyway, I think it was the 100-meter sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, in the photo finish, they're both crossing exactly the same. There's no difference.
Right.
And so they actually called it a tie. And because there's no rules for it, they had to come up with a rule for what happens if you have a tie. And they decided that the competitors can choose either a coin toss.
Wow.
Or a runoff.
That would be better.
So obviously I think they're going to pick the runoff. I don't know what ended up with that, but this was the same kind of situation, but there was a slight lead. If you look at, Kent's bike, which is actually shorter than Salom's, at first I was like, oh no, they think they screwed up because the back wheel obviously of Kent is way ahead, but that's because the bike is a little bit shorter,
right?
But yeah, but there was a little sliver of a tire, and I think it was less than 1/1000 of a second, but that's the smallest number that they record, therefore it became 1/1000 of a second, and Salom had to be leave Parc Fermé as fourth place.
If that happens, I believe in MotoGP or the smaller classes, there is circumstances to take care of that. I think it's the
fastest lap.
Yeah, the fastest lap.
That's usually what's used for all sorts of things. Sure. You know.
Yep. Moto3. So if there's
but that was a fucking amazing race.
And what we're trying to point out to you guys is if there's those of you that just watch MotoGP or MotoGP and Moto2 and don't catch Moto3, this is the one to watch. This is one that'll suck you in and keep you there. So take the opportunity to get it, watch it, and enjoy it, because it was definitely a barn burner. That was
if Martin was here, He'd be saying, Vinales must have looked at those results and went, I can't believe it. Cortese, well, out of those three guys, why did it have to be Cortese that got second?
Yep, indeed.
You know,
indeed.
Because those are the two guys that are leading the championship. The Vinales with 130 now. He pulled five away from Sergio Cortese, who's now on 123. Luis Salom is in third with 88. And then we go down to Romano Fanati with 65, Louis Rossi with 56, and so on down the line.
Yep. Kent with a nice little boost from that too, brought him up to 42, for quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
All right. So those were the knife fighters, although they were the junior axe murderers this week. And now we go on to the axe murderer class that has gotten a little bit more civilized, kind of.
This race. So first of all, qualifying, Marquez had crashed like a ridiculous amount of times during free practice and during qualifying, and then it didn't look like he was going to be able to get pole. Speaking of pole, Paul Espargaro was holding on to pole and looked very nicely. He was almost 4 tenths faster than Andrea Iannone, with Randy Krumenacker, Dominic Goethe, who had a great weekend, Simone Corsi, and Scott Redding. But then Marquez pulled off this freaking crazy lap out of nowhere at the end, and was almost half a second ahead of Espargaro on pole.
I think Pedrosa needs to go have a chat with Mark and figure out how Marquez can crash as hard as he does and walk away from each and every one of them with only, you know, a bruise or something.
Yeah, seriously.
Because he was bending it left and right, and the team was pretty smart, you know. every press release that was coming out from them, they're like, well, he fell hard and he's fine. So, yeah, <right. laughs> and clearly he was. I mean, clearly, he's still got the capability. He's got a little bit of that stoner-esque thing into him. He just goes, all right, this is the one, and bam, and knocks out a kick-ass lap. So I was kind of impressed.
Very, yep. Very. The race itself was a little bit disappointing because
we just watched Moto3.
Well, that too, but the most important fight, which is between Luthi, Marquez, and Espargaro, got solved by middle of the second lap, because on the first lap they go into the slowest corner, Struben, and Luthi was on the inside. Tucked the front, took out Rathapark Willerot, and was out of the race. Rathapark was actually able to rebound, but then had to pull out eventually later. I guess the bike was just too damaged.
That was a really weird-looking fall, too.
It was a strange fall, man.
Like slow motion, almost.
Yeah, exactly. And it was amazing that he only took out one rider, because that looked like it was going to be just dominoes.
And it had to be poor Willerot, too. Poor guy.
Yeah, I know. He's quite a target. And on lap two, going into the very fast Ramshoek, we were seeing the replay of the – they were showing the replay of the crash, Luthi's crash. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and there's a bike tumbling and somebody getting up, and it's Paul Espargaro.
Yep.
Paul Espargaro crashed out of the lead, and he was already pulling away from the pack, but obviously he was pushing too hard.
Boy, did he beat the crap out of his bike in that too.
Oh my god, that bike was destroyed. He took quite a tumble, mm-hmm. but I think the biggest beating was his championship.
Very true.
Fight. And you could see like the just immediately before he even went ow, he was sitting there going damn.
Yep.
You know. Then it turned into an Andrea Iannone runaway. Looked almost like the only guy who was really challenging him was Scott Redding. Mark Marquez was hanging out behind those guys, having a little battle with. Well, first of all, Dominic Goethe was leading the race, but quickly got sucked in, and he finished eventually
seventh.
Yeah, so he was like fifth by the fourth lap already.
Right.
But he did. He looked like he. Yeah, whatever. we know what happened at the end, so it doesn't matter what he looked like. But on the last few laps, Iannone started to have problems. So Iannone was disappearing, and Marquez finally got past Scott Redding. Scott Redding had a great ride, and him and Marquez had a great little battle. And then Marquez started to make time up on Iannone, but didn't quite look like he was going to be able to do it. But Iannone was getting slower, and Marquez was not going slower. He was getting faster.
Yep.
And he caught him in the last lap, and we had a great, great fight in the last lap that Marquez won by a, I would say, not a fair margin because it makes it look like because he went by half a second. It was actually much closer than that. It's just that Iannone basically put everything on the line the last coming out of the last corner and kind of blew it.
That just reminded me that I remember tweeting to Scott Redding and to the tweet world at large on like between the motos or before the Moto 2 race, and I'm like, Redding Power, please leave some tires to the end of this thing.
Yeah, this is two races in a row now. Very, very good for Scott Redding.
Yep.
But he was 7 seconds behind.
True.
And he was being caught by Rabat. So I think he was just starting to lose them.
Well, the problem is in the past, he would usually do that about 7 or 8 laps from the end.
Exactly, exactly. This is great. Yep. This is great. And you could see that his riding style has definitely changed. He's not sliding the bike around as much.
Mm-hmm.
Although he was at the end. He was backing it in at the end. Let's see. And then Rabat was on fourth, we mentioned. And Alex De Angelis, fifth.
Yep.
Very nice. Bradley Smith, sixth. So there's a little bit of resurgence there. We mentioned Dominika Gerter, seventh. Johann Zarco, still, doing quite well, eighth. Tony Elias, who actually was featured quite a bit on the front for the first part of the race, was in ninth. Look at Callie, Randy Krumanacker, and so down the line. We don't hear, obviously, Luthi who fell, Espargaro who fell. And unfortunately, Damien Cudlin, who was
mechanical.
Had a mechanical, yeah.
He's back out there again this weekend, though. It looks like he's going to be on that SAG team for the rest of the year, probably. So,
right.
Yeah, he's pretty pumped about it.
So now that Espargaro and Luthi both crashed out of this race, they got passed by Andrea Iannone, who just picked up 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Iannone in second, but Marc Marquez now has a 23-point lead, which is, still not totally not insurmountable, but it's starting to happen.
Well, as we've seen over this last weekend, even a 25-point lead doesn't get you much.
Right. Very true. Speaking of which, let's go to MotoGP.
I think we should.
MotoGP had 5 minutes of qualifying, basically, or it was 5.5 minutes of qualifying because they went out there. It was there was a threat of rain the entire weekend, but we never really got a dumping too badly.
And QP started nice, but nobody wanted.
QP started nice, yeah. No, but there was.
We had a wonderful weather at the beginning of QP, but it was 16 minutes into it, and then there was a downpour.
The thing is, the downpour started on one part of the track,
right,
which totally caught out Casey Stoner, for example,
mm-hmm,
and a couple other riders. Didn't necessarily have falls, but they definitely were surprised by it, to say the least, and took their time coming back. And then there was no point in they set their fast laps on the race trim. There was no point in going out in the wet because they weren't going to do any better. I think some riders were actually preparing to go out in the wet. They had one bike set up for wet because they were thinking, well, what if it rains on Sunday? We don't really have a wet setup. But it cleared, and suddenly we had the track drying, and there was still 6 minutes left, and so everybody jumped on their soft tires, and it was mayhem out there. Casey Stoner immediately set a great time and kept it, so he was on pole with Danny Pedrosa second, Jorge Lorenzo third, Stefan Bradl fourth, Cal Crutchlow fifth, and Ben Spies sixth. And boy, did Cal have nice things to say about Hector Barbera.
Yes, he did. Cal was in form this weekend. As you said, Jules, it was quite chaotic that last 5.5-6 minutes. And there were a lot of guys that were getting balked. Cal wasn't the only one that was complaining about things. And frankly,
you can't really expect it to be as cordial.
Yeah, you got 21 guys on the circuit all trying to get the best time they can in essentially what comes down to two good laps. Maybe
it's
three.
It's because it's a 1.3 minute lap, so you could squeeze three.
Yeah. Bottom line is 7 guys a lap per lap on average, trying to get a quick time. Ain't going to work out.
Yeah.
Didn't for everybody. We bookending Casey Stoner was Colin Edwards. Not certainly not where Colin wanted to be.
No, and he looked unhappy.
Well, he did, and he had a very interesting tweet over this weekend. He had
I actually saw it, but remind me what it said.
It was the fill in the blanks one.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So
my bike is
a
fill in the blanks, whatever.
We'll leave it at that.
I think I said not upside down or something like that. Anyway, after the QP, there was an interesting. Was it during the post QP conference, or was it just an interview that Jorge Lorenzo did? But somebody asked him about the rumor of Yamaha making an offer to Valentino Rossi and what he thinks about it. And he said he doesn't know anything about the offer, but they asked him if there was going to be if Rossi was going to come back, if there was going to be a wall. And he said, no, there won't be a wall. I don't mind. And he said some nice things. And he said, but Yamaha has to decide because there are some other very good riders. And I think he was basically implying, you know, well, what about Cal? What about Ben? What about Dovizioso?
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. I remember last week we were talking about how Gavin Emmett and Nick Harris list the CRT kind of like a championship, separate championship, and
sure.
Nick Harris actually referred to it as Randy DePugnier was the top writer in the CRT category.
Which, considering they're the official announcers for English language announcers for Dorna, that's kind of interesting that they are. Now, I don't think there's any direction to call it that, or maybe there is. I don't know. Nick, Gavin? Want to fill us in on that? I'd be curious.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely going to make a point of asking those guys about it.
So, and so it kind of does keep that, not segregation, if you will, but a different steps of the podium, if you wanted to put it that way.
Right.
The race, Jules. The weekend, with all its questions of weather and whatnot, turned out to be pretty nice on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, we just had Moto 3, Moto 2 both had dry races. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of
question
danger in Moto 2, it seemed like, from the weather, but it never came.
Yep.
Unfortunately, MotoGP didn't really live up to the other two races because it was...
the first four laps were great.
Three.
it was
what I call a one-pass MotoGP race.
Right.
In the end, the big thing, of course, was Bautista barreled into the first corner on the inside. He later said that he completely missed his braking marker because of something that happened with Dovizioso. He was trying to get inside of Dovizioso and got distracted, he said. Anyway, he missed his braking marker and took out the championship leader, Jorge Lorenzo.
The guy that was 25 points ahead.
And as Jorge tried to get to the bike, that thing freaking exploded.
Yeah, well, yeah.
There was some crazy smoke coming out of it. I think it was basically running super hot. And I don't actually know whether he lost the engine or not.
I'm pretty sure.
Do you know that yet?
It was pinned on full throttle in the gravel.
That's what it looked like, yeah.
And when those things are on their side doing that, they pretty much eat themselves as far as oil goes. There's no way that you can get proper oil delivery.
Right. So the question mark is, did he just take a new engine that weekend? Because he was due to take a new engine.
I don't know. And I doubt there will be any provisions made. Go ahead.
Interesting thought. You're saying that there's a possibility that they might give him an extra allocation?
I don't know.
Because it wasn't his fault?
It's a good question. And I don't know if there is anything in the rules to
there's nothing in the rules like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I read the parts about the engine allocation pretty carefully, and there's nothing about that in the rules.
So I think given that at that point he was a championship leader, and being Spanish, you'd hear a lot of people cry foul.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're both Spanish,
right. But I'm talking more like Dorna and Jorge. Mm-hmm. Would it be fair? Yeah, maybe. But to come up with a rule, I mean, we really have, I'm trying to think if how many people that we've had that lost an engine when they were taken out in a crash and it wasn't their fault. I'm sure there's been some.
Right.
Has that affected the championship to this point, or has that affected a rider's final standings? I don't know. Maybe there should be something there like that, but then you have to determine whose fault a crash is.
Well, right. Well, but which most of the time they try not to.
Well, that, you know? That being said, this time they certainly did decide whose fault it was.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. And we might as well just talk about that now. So basically what happened is that this is the exact text of the FIM ruling. They said on Saturday, blah, 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 blah. Not exact, because I'm going to skip that part. But they said that Alvaro Bautista wrote in an irresponsible manner, causing danger to rider Jorge Lorenzo, which is an infringement of the article N121.2. And race director decided to impose on Alvaro Bautista the penalty of starting the next race, which is Sachsenring, on the 8th of July, 2012, from the last position on the starting grid. And then, of course, an appeal was lodged by San Carlo Honda Grissini. But on the spot, the FIM stewards confirmed the decision of race direction, and that means that the decision is final and there are no more appeals available. So then I went and I checked out I've read this part of the rules before, but I just wanted to see the exact text. And as most rules in MotoGP are, in Grand Prix racing, and I still love this about the sport, is that they're very open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
And this one basically just says, riders must ride in a responsible manner which does not cause danger to other competitors or participants, either on the track or in the pit lane. Duh. Any infringement of this rule will be penalized with one of the following penalties. Fine.
Anything we want to do.
Right. Well, but they do say a fine, a change of position, a ride through, which we saw with Simoncelli last year, with that, a time penalty,
right,
which we've seen. Which was the Marquez thing that got overturned. Then a drop of any number of grid positions at the rider's next races, which is the one they decided to use. Disqualification and withdrawal of championship points and suspension, which is basically meaning you're done for the season.
Right.
So disqualification is for that one round. And so it was a pretty harsh penalty, but Lorenzo said that even though they made up, he said that a couple of years ago, like in 2005, when he did that in the 250 season, they disqualified. I mean, they would have disqualified him. He crashed out that race, but he was also not allowed to race in the next round.
Right, right.
And we've obviously seen that before as well, because I think Hopkins got that penalty as well, right?
He did. Yep.
And a very similar kind of thing.
Depunier probably could have deserved it a few times.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Randy.
Right, so it's obviously very open ended, and Alvaro has definitely apologized and kind of took it on the chin. Well, the big thing, of course, is that Lorenzo was out of the race, and he was looking pretty good the whole weekend, and we got, I think, robbed of a pretty good fight between him and Stoner. Instead, we had Pedrosa that took off and was caught by Stoner, and Stoner passed him and won. by 5 seconds. Yeah. So, and the pass of Stoner on Pedrosa was not even that exciting. The really cool fight was really for third place between Dovizioso and Spies. They really diced it, but I think Spies at the end started losing some tires, and he was not the only one who had issues with tires, because Rossi pulled into the pits about 10 laps in. And pointed to the rear tire. They changed the tire. He went back out because by that time a bunch of people had fallen, and it was worthwhile just to be out there to get a point. He actually ended up getting 3.
Those tires were jacked, dude.
But dude, yeah, exactly. So Russell Webb tweeted a photo, which I actually turned out to be taken by photographer Alessandro. Nadi or something like that. I forget his actual name, of Rossi's rear tire as he was coming into the pits. And remember China 2006? It was France, I think.
Which one? The crash?
No, Rossi. Oh, Rossi's tire.
Yeah, his tire. Okay.
Well, and this was worse. Yeah. I mean, this was freaking worse.
Well, I thought you were talking about how I haven't seen a photo go that viral in a long time. That thing just spread around the planet like a wildfire. Because one of the things I do after the race is I go see what people's reactions are, and they have a whole bunch of different places that I go, and that photo was everywhere. Yeah. And there was also one, you mentioned Spee's tire. His tires were probably a little bit more jacked up, the rear tire. Right. And so those guys both got caught out, and there's no, and Bridgestone took some very serious note of it. I'm not sure if you had a chance to read the Bridgestone recap, Jules.
Yes, I did actually. Yeah. Yep.
And,
they apologized, which is, you know,
it's a good start. There was a lot of very interesting chatter to this since then. And it's been a very short period of time. And people were starting to try and make comparisons to Michelin before they went out of the series. I'm like, slow down. Wait a minute. You know, this has not been a consistent problem. And when I say consistent, Michelin had probably about an 8-race span where they just couldn't pull it together. And the track was indeed, 20 centigrade warmer than it was last year. So there's a fair amount of difference. Well, that being said, we were kind of pointing our fingers at Michelin in Laguna Seca in 2007, was it?
Look, these guys make one thing. Yeah. They make round rubber things that the bikes go on. They better have their act together. I don't care if the temperature changes 50 degrees.
Bridgestone makes more than just tires.
What's that?
Bridgestone makes more than just tires.
Okay, I know. But I'm just saying, yeah, when in reference to this championship,
it is their bike, their bread
20 bread. Degrees?
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, yeah, I know it's a big difference, but allow for that.
Well, it's 20 degrees centigrade, Jules.
I know. I realize that. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not ready to throw him under the bus, and I don't think anybody is.
No, of course not. Of course not. Yeah. But
see what you can do.
When you have a control tire, this kind of a thing actually, or at least control manufacturer, this kind of a thing is painful to see.
Right. Well, I mean, okay. Right. Let's say we had,
because you could say, well, if there was competition, this wouldn't have affected the entire field.
Well, okay, true. It wouldn't have affected the entire field, but it would have certainly affected the riders that were contracted to ride on that tire, or on that brand. And so, I mean, the days of riders going to the other tire manufacturer. I think who was the last person that probably.
Pedrosa?
No, maybe, yeah. That's another good trivia question, isn't it?
Pedrosa was the last one that switched from Michelin.
No. What I'm talking about is
Is
on a race weekend where you'd have to go back to the Lawson, Roberts, whoever else days for somebody that went. And they didn't like the tires their guys had, so they got a tire from the other guys and ran it during a race weekend.
Yeah, you mean their teammates or somebody else?
A different manufacturer.
Oh man,
yeah. So like a Dunlop and a Michelin, for example. That did happen. That's a good trivia question. And
that's a lot. I'm sure that hasn't happened in the last decade.
No, it hasn't. But I remember the days when it did. Where are we, Jules?
So the other person that got extremely affected by the Bautista first corner incident was Cal Crutchlow, because he had to avoid those guys, and he ended up being 13th at the end of the first lap. And once again, you know, he's also injured still, obviously broken and dislocated ankle, and you know, he was cutting through the field, so it was really exciting to see. And obviously, he had the pace to be much, much further up there. He ended up fifth, 22 seconds behind Stoner, but who knows? He could have been on the podium. He definitely had the pace for it.
True.
We lost Stefan Bradl, which is too bad, because he had a obviously a good start, and he was doing pretty well. And then the other guys that we lost were Espargaro, Edwards, who pulled in, and Hernandez.
Yeah. So the
which meant that when Rossi came back out, and he obviously they switched the tire and he was lapped, he was already good for 2 points, but he ended up passing James Ellison.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting this weekend. Everybody that finished once again got points. So the bottom line is if you've got an issue, it's worth it to get back out there if you get enough laps left to pick something up.
Right.
Unless your bike is complete.
Oof. So now we have Jorge Lorenzo and Casey Stoner tied at 140 points, which is great for the championship.
Not so great for Lorenzo, who came into the weekend with a 25-point lead, alluding to what I was talking about earlier in the show.
Exactly.
Yep.
Danny Pedrosa is in a very solid third place with 121 points. Cal Crutchlow's fourth with Dovizioso in fifth, 77 and 76. Those guys separated by 1 point. Herbert must be loving it. Or hating it.
No, he's loving it. They're both pushing each other.
And then Rossi and Hayden are only 2 points apart as well, 61 and 59. So that's good to see. Yep. Bautista obviously dropped quite a few places down to 50. I mean, he stayed at 58 points, so he's down in eighth now. Stephen Bradl's still in ninth place. And Ben Spies actually went up a point, space, now is in 10th.
Yeah, and you got to admit, fourth spot for Ben is a good solid run and continuing his resurrection, if you will.
Yes, very well said, resurrection.
Yep. So good on him. It was definitely one of those weekends where you could see that team was trying to bring things together, and they did. Everything actually went relatively, at least from a semi-outsider's perspective, at the very middle of the night watching the race, pretty good for that team. So,
yeah. Yep.
Man, we still have another series to do, don't we?
just a very small item of news, which was that we have not heard any updates about the health of Joan Lescours. And this was the first week when we actually heard something, and we even saw a photo that got posted around.
Yep.
Joan's in rehab, and he has regained most of the use of his hands, and they're not even discounting the possibility of him being able to, you know, be able to take steps in the future, which is incredible. Frankly,
it'd be very cool. We hadn't heard a lot. You know, we still saw the number 17 around the track and on riders' helmets and fairings and stuff like that. But it is nice to get some word and to see a smiling face. So, way cool.
Very, very cool.
Yep.
We're at Aragon.
And it was interesting this weekend, Jules, because Assen basically was relatively cool up until Sunday, and Aragon was a blast furnace.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a blast furnace, and it remained. It dropped a little bit on Sunday, but not as much as they were hoping.
Right.
So qualifying.
But it's a dry heat.
Yeah. it is. Actually.
Yeah.
What I found interesting was that in free practice, Checa and Giuliano and actually all the Ducatis were really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
They were way down the order. I mean, we're talking like in the, you know, out of points if they were racing kind of places. But they pulled it together by qualifying, and Checa did make it to the second row. But surprise, surprise, Tom Sykes was in pole.
That's his sixth of the year, I believe.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, amazing.
It's amazing, amazing. And
what we need him to do is actually win a race now.
Biaggi was, on the other hand, doing looking like it was just going to be a cakewalk for him. I just want to point out that Sykes' Super Bowl lap was 0.7 of a second faster than Biaggi, who was by far the fastest of the rest of them, because he was 0.3 ahead for the next guy. So it was just something magical again, you know.
Did you happen to do any comparison to MotoGP?
Oh, dude.
I didn't. I was just curious.
I am going to have to look this up right now and we'll just sing or something.
La, 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 la.
I'm going to, because I want to see this. This is a really good point. 2011.
But that being said, it was really windy. So that would have slowed the bikes down. It was a windy weekend.
Yes, that's true. It was windy. And of course, the temperatures meant that the tires were...
Yeah.
A little bit softer.
On the other hand, they had qualifying tires. So subtract the difficulties by the wind, add in the fact they have qualifying tires and a completely different temperature raise, and we have a difference of
10 seconds, almost 8 seconds.
Holy crap. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Casey Stoner was 148 last year.
Wow.
Wow.
All right. Never mind.
Wow. Wow. That's a big fucking difference. That's amazing. All right. Hey, that's actually good to good to see that the prototypes actually matter.
Yep.
All right. So, who was not who didn't do very well? Fabrizio didn't do very well. Was kind of a bummer. Aoyama, man, hurting.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even make it into Super Bowl, and neither did Hopkins. Hopkins had a couple of crashes. Didn't hurt himself, but he was just not getting on. This must be his first visit to Aragon.
Hopkins,
I think he missed it last year, right?
Was he injured? Was that the finger? I guess that was it.
Well, he was doing the BSB
right
superbike right. thing, right? So
yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he may have done a track day here, but because I seem to remember last year him talking about it. But anyway, he's still got some tracks to come to terms with, so. If that's the case, at least at race pace.
All right, let's go through these races really quick. yep. Race one, Jonathan Rea I think it was Laverty and Biagi took off.
Right.
But Rea crashed out very, very much in the beginning and took out Smertz.
Or Jakob.
Who, and then Johnny Rea actually rejoined the race and just missed out on points. Then we had this crazy crash between Badovini, about five laps in, he took out Sykes because it was so unfortunate for Tom Sykes. By this point, Tom Sykes was, I think, in fourth position. Badovini was riding extremely well, lost the front of the bike and was going to the outside and literally an inch of it tapped the back of Tom Sykes, Kawasaki. And I think it was just one of those moments where the rear was light because they were going through into a corner. So Tom was on the brakes, which meant the bike rotated because it didn't have that much contact with the surface. And he went down as well. That was really a bummer.
Especially for my fantasy league.
Oh, for you? Yeah. Well, I had Lorenzo in mind, so that's kind of sucked.
Yeah, there you go.
But I also had a stoner. So anyway. Biagi, who looked like he was going to take off and run away, got caught by Melandri. They had a great fight. Fantastic last lap. I guess Melandri and that BMW, going back to the listener email from...
that was on.
From Hanif Dawson. We got to remember that because he's...
He's number one.
Right into tablet.
Yeah.
Yes, he's number one. So Melandri and Biagi had a great fight, but Biagi did win that one. And Checa came in third, which was surprising because he was really struggling. I think Sykes falling
probably helped spurred him on.
Well, no. He was already past Sykes at that point, but the thing is it broke up all the fighting behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he still had Davies and Laverty for company for a while, and then Laverty got dropped off. Anyway, so we had Biagi, Melandri, Checa on the podium, Davies, Laverty, Fabrizio, who obviously had a great race because he was starting 17th, I think.
Yep.
I'm sorry, 13th. And I keep,
it is hard to remember. Well, there was.
I keep forgetting that they still do four per row, which means that 13th is actually not that bad.
Well, this is one of those weekends once again, Jules, where there was so much racing going on. It's like,
yeah, I know, and there was also the Euro
mm-hmm.
final, the Euro 2012 final, which was a great game, a fantastic game if you love Spain.
Yeah,
if you're Spanish. A horrible, horrible, horrible game. If you were rooting for the Italians,
I actually it seemed like there were an awful lot of non-Italians that were rooting for them being the underdog.
Yeah, they were the underdog, but there was also something about the Spanish kind of dominance in soccer. I don't want to spend too much time on this.
They
played a beautiful game. And totally deserved to win that championship. I was actually rooting for Italy.
Yep.
because I want, I like underdogs. But anyway,
we're so much wandering into uncharted territory.
we definitely don't want to do soccer pod. No. All right. What were we? We were just going down. So yeah. So Fabrizio was 6th, Chasm, Giuliano, and Camier 7th, 8th, 9th, and so on. We lost Sykes. We lost Badavini. We lost David Salom, Mercado, Baz, and Smertz. Obviously, was taken out by Ray. Ray ended up 16th, just behind Hopkins, who was the last point scorer. Then we had race two, which really, obviously, we had Super Sport, but we'll go to that next. Race two of Superbikes was really good because, again, it looked like Biaggi was going to run away with it, but all weekend. But it was Laverty who took the lead and would not give it up. And because of the fight between him and Biaggi, the Landry Davies, Ray, and Haslam were all involved in that fight, although Ray and Haslam then got dropped off. But that battle between the first four guys, Melandri, Laverty, Davies, and Biaggi was
way fun.
Amazing.
Yep.
Amazing stuff.
It was a good battle.
Really good.
It was actually fun because I remember Chaz actually got dropped off for a bit and pulled it back in.
Yeah.
Partially because those guys were duking it out between them.
And Melandri was definitely, you know, so if you haven't seen a race at Aragon yet, and you have like a MotoGP.com subscription, you can review all the races from past years, and it's worth going to see like the 2010 Aragon race where they were still trying to figure out the track, because a lot of these guys were making the same mistakes that the MotoGP guys did in 2010,
right?
Which is that back straight is downhill, so it's really fast,
right?
And man, were people going wide at the end of that, but because it's an S at the bottom of the straight. If you do go wide, you can actually power into the next right-hander. So it's a left-hander that at the bottom of the straight. You can power into the next right-hander and regain your position. And we saw that a lot in MotoGP in 2010. Not so much in 2011. 2011 MotoGP was kind of a processional race, but definitely saw that here in Superbikes and Super Sport.
Yep.
Some people running way wide.
the classic inside-out move.
Yeah, but but mostly not on purpose. It was mostly like shit. Oh, okay. I can.
I think
kind of make the rest of this.
I think Biaggi was the first to model it, and he usually is in those kind of situations, going in
absolutely
going in deep.
Yeah, but Melandri was doing it a lot, and on the last lap, it was. Davies led. I don't think Biaggi led it by the last lap, but Laverty led. Melandri led, but Melandri won.
Yep. It was cool because you were saying Laverty was kind of relentless. Well, Marco put in a stellar performance the last few laps to get up, and you know those two have had their differences in the past, but I think they actually race each other really well this weekend. It was fun to watch.
Absolutely,
I don't know what time it was when I watched that because I watched that live. It was like 3 a.m. or something like that. It was nuts.
The first race, yeah.
Yeah.
The second race was, you know, like 7.
Yeah.
So now we got Biaggi, you know, it's really a Biaggi-Melandri battle at this point, and Melandri's 48 points behind, so it's going to be tough to catch Biaggi, but there's still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 rounds, so, you know, 12 races, that's a lot of points.
True.
A lot of points left.
Think Biaggi will retire after this year?
No.
No?
I don't think so, actually.
He's going to go until they kick him out?
I think he's going to go back to MotoGP. No.
Holy. Wow. Yeah, I talked to him yesterday. He said there's just... No,
I actually don't think he's going to retire. I think he is in top form and enjoying himself. So we'll see how he finishes the year. We'll see how it looks at the end of the year.
I have to say, Manuela was in fine form at the end of race two.
It's so funny because the whole team just lines up to get hugs and kisses from her.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
They're like, my turn.
Well, anyway, carry on.
So it's Biaggi, Melandri, then Ray in third. Cheka is in fourth with 73 behind Biaggi. And Sykes is in fifth still, 76. So Sykes, Ray, and Cheka will switch positions. I think that it's going to be between Biaggi and Melandri up front, and Melandri's got some work to do. But you know, he's doing it. He pulled in a couple of points this round for sure, because Biagi had a first and a fourth, and Belanger had a second and a first. So
good stuff.
Good stuff. Good stuff, as Bob used to say. Super Sports. It's very. I don't want to spend too much time on Super Sports, but Jules Cousel was on pole, and Sheridan Mularias was second, and that's cool to see him up there.
Yep.
And Sofoglu third, Foy the Ferret fourth, Sam Lowes, who was having a great time in practice, did not do as well in qualifying, was on second row with Brooke Parks, Iannuso, and Metzger. And the race got red flagged at the start because there was a stalled bike. I believe it was Schultz that stalled the Bogdan Kapitier Honda. He's a substitute rider.
And he didn't put his hand up.
He did not put his hand up. I think he was trying to roll it out of the way or something. And Polzer, who was behind him, two positions, hit him.
Didn't see him.
Didn't see him and hit him. And by the time the bikes were going down the back straight, the red flags were going. There's no way they were going to clean that up. So we had probably about a 40-minute delay.
That reminded me. What race was that at? Was that there was one where that happened? A World Superbike race that happened. I don't know, 4 years ago, where somebody near the back had a similar incident. Got his boot knocked off.
Oh yes, it was. Wasn't it Haslam that got his boot knocked off?
No, I don't think it was Haslam. It was a rider further down in the ranks. That was the same race where somebody's wheel came off, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's or crumbled.
Yeah.
I think it was Australia.
It could have been. Could have been PI. Yeah. Nuts. Yep. Anyway, I digress. We're talking about Super Sport, aren't we?
So it was red flagged that we came back. Cluzel led the restart, fell on lap three in a Cluzel fashion, and was not able to get his bike back up. We had a good battle between Foray actually looked really just not coming to terms with this track. When we were talking about Biagi and Landry going wide at the bottom of the back straight, like Foray was leaving the track and then finding his way back.
Well, let's be fair.
Yeah.
During the races on Sunday, it was hella windy.
Yeah, I know, definitely. But he was the only one really doing it.
True.
And he did it over and over and over. I mean, he must have done it like four times on camera that we saw.
Well, even Frey said it was windy.
Yes, but he said it in a different context.
Yes, we'll get to that.
Brooke Parks was up there. Sam Lowes was running mostly in fourth or fifth. And Sofoglu took the front. And actually, Sofoglu did take the front right away. I believe Lowes did get in ahead. It was Sofoglu, then Foray, and then then there was a strange incident on the back straight, about five laps from the end, or six laps from the end. Sofoglu was passing Foray, or they were fighting, and he did this really strange, you know, trying to cut into Foray, but also gesturing with his helmet, almost like he was trying to headbutt Foray out of the way. It was a very aggressive move, very dangerous, fastest part of the track, and he was penalized for it. And the penalty was kind of strange because it just said, and both us and the announcers were confused about it because it just said, you know, three positions, a penalty of three positions. And it was unclear whether it was three positions at the time that it was given when Sofoglu was in second or from whatever position he finished in, because he ended up finishing first, which is very awkward because he passed Sam Lowes. And this actually happened before, because remember when Foray got that strange ride-through penalty?
Yep.
And nobody knew. This was was it last round or the previous round?
I think it was the previous round.
And Sam Lowes didn't know that that Foray was going to get was getting a penalty, and because Foray didn't know what the hell he was doing, he was still racing, and Samuels ended up pushing it too hard and crashing out of that race.
Right.
And so the worry again was that this was going to happen again because Cefuaglia was getting this penalty, but we weren't sure whether Samuels knew or not. Apparently, the team gave him a Cefuaglia out on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So he just said, okay, fine, I'm just going to let him go. Whatever, it must mean that he got black flagged or something. So he just he rode his own pace and finished in second. And it was awkward because they're both waving because Sam Lowe's knows. But Cefuaglia may know, but he doesn't. He's completely, you know, failing to admit it.
He's kidding.
Yeah, he's kidding, yeah. Exactly. So they're both waving to the crowd like they're the winners. It was kind of awkward. And at the end, you know, I have not heard any explanation for this. And so it was really funny what Foray said in the post-race interview, well, which is what you were alluding to.
We do need to point out that Keenan ended up in Parc Fermé as well.
He did, and he got kicked out. Yeah. Because they said, hey, dude, you're actually fifth.
Yeah.
So this guy here, Moraes, is taking third. Yeah. It was was that Moraes' first podium?
I believe it was his first Supersport podium. He's a former South African.
I know. I'm saying it's in world.
Yeah,
world.
I believe so.
Cool.
Yep.
Good on him. Samuels gets the win, which is very, very big for the championship. And frankly, Cefuaglia really got lucky that he didn't get disqualified for that maneuver, because that was pretty insane. But so go ahead. Tell us what Foray said.
I believe.
Because they were asking him, so what happened between you and Cefuaglia back there?
It made me think of, oh, I got bit by a mosquito.
Exactly. Exactly.
Foray said something along the lines, and I can't quote him exactly, but and he is a sarcastic Frenchman. But I don't know. Maybe, but here's the difference, Jules. It sounded to me like he said it sincerely.
No, dude, he had this big smile on his face.
At the same time, well, you know, the smile on his face could have been, okay, so I'm going to speculate here because we don't know. The smile on his face could have been from an incident that occurred between Keenan and Foray off camera, because you don't catch these guys all the time. And it's possible that Keenan was coming back and paying back a little love to Foray, and he was the one that got caught on camera.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm totally down with that theory, because the amount of times that Foray left the track and came back in, it's very likely that he messed up some rider, and that could have been Cefuaglia.
Not to mention that Foray, it's not out of the pale for him to give another rider some stick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he's, yeah. What, 39 now? He's not going to let some little...
Well, he's been doing it for a lot longer than he's been doing it into his 20s too.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
But anyway, that could have, that wry grin, if you will, could have been him going, well, you know, he gave it to me, and or I gave it to him, and he gave it to me back, and he's the one that got caught. Whatever. It just means that you know, Keenan got back some points.
What he did say was, he said that, well, I guess it was a little windy out there.
A little windy, and indeed it was.
And just for those who don't know what the reference you made, there was a famous incident at Catalunya back in like 2002 between Valentino Rossi and Biaggi, when they got into a scuffle going up the stairs to the podium. And afterwards, in the post-race conference, Biaggi had a scratch on his face. And somebody asked him, well, what's the scratch from? You know, trying to get some dirt on the fight. And he said, oh, I think I got bit by a mosquito.
Yeah. Good, that's good. Okay, if you've been living in a cave long enough not to know that little tidbit.
That's true. Your points would have to be.
Yeah. Oh, my God, Jules, did we finish?
We did. We're close. We did. Cefuaglia, 117 points. Yeah. Sam Lowe's pulls in a bunch, so now he's at 101, 16, which is pretty good. You know, now we're within that win.
True.
Actually, all it would take is for him to take, I'm not going to make the math. But anyway, there's six rounds left. Six rounds left, plenty of time for Lowe's to catch up. Cluzel still in third. Foray is up to fourth now, and only 1 point behind Cluzel. And Parks is down in fifth.
Right on. Right on.
So that's it. Super Bike Super Sport Aragon. let's roll, James.
All right, let's do that.
All right.
It's Martin from Motopod here, and on the line, as he frequently is for us, and rather marvellously, is James Whittam, back from commentating on the Aragon World Superbike and World Super Sport. Some drama at the weekend, James. First thing I've got to ask you is, what on earth was going on with Keenan and Fabien Foray?
Do you know what? We never got to the bottom of it. Nobody seemed to know around the paddock, and there was no real definitive sort of answer. We certainly didn't see anything on our monitors, and nobody seemed to see anything from trackside. Certainly nothing that would give him, let's say, cause to go as kind of mental as what he did. I mean, it's as dangerous a move as I've ever seen in a sort of retaliation for something. You see fish shaking, and I've done that, and we've all done it, but I've never seen anything quite like that.
No, I mean, the craziest thing I can remember is Norrie Hager shaking his fist at Max Biaggi's back and then getting flipped off his bike and bouncing on his head. Yeah. But it was extraordinary. I mean, the speeds they're doing there, and it looked like an attempted headbutt.
It wouldn't have worried me. The fact is that it's so easy for a brake lever to get caught in somebody's backside or get caught in leathers or hit a bit of the fairing and the job's over. You know, there's a big, big, big accident. So, I don't know what it would have provoked him into that if there is anything that, I mean, I've had some things happen to me on track, and as have everybody who's ever raced, really. And if you've got a real beef like that, you maybe shake a fist or you shake your head on track. But you go and take it with them afterwards. You know, you go and say, look, what was that about? You know, why did you do that? I'm not happy with it. Whatever you do, but you just don't, you know, you don't endanger life, which is what he did, in my opinion.
No. It seemed absolutely crazy. And Fabien Foray afterwards, strangely for him, saying maybe it was the wind. I mean,
there's no doubt that Fabien knew exactly. This is what made me think, perhaps there had been something that we'd not seen off screen that made Fabien a little bit more kind of diplomatic than what we've seen him before. But I mean, if that was unprovoked, you'd have no kind of qualms about saying in a press conference, I don't know what all that was about. That was really dangerous. But he didn't say that. Maybe it was a wind. Clearly, he knew it wasn't the wind. But I don't know. We haven't really got a definitive at all on that one. I'm trying to find out myself just through, you know, my own interest, really.
And a crazy thing to do when you consider that Jules Cluzel had crashed out.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite a good chance for him to really solidify his position at the top. And he's picked up 13 points instead of potential 25. But I did get the point you and Jack were saying, that the danger with the way they dealt with it, so hard to communicate that to the riders. And Sam, I don't know if Sam was aware, but he must have. I mean, he obviously was aware of something because he was sort of celebrating on the way round, and I'm sure that wasn't for second place. But the danger of someone still trying to race him and beat him and taking risks, there's no need to do because he's going to be pumped back.
Exactly that. I mean, that would be my kind of, you know, there's always problems with administering penalties as the race is going on. And we've seen it before where somebody's had a 20-second kind of penalty, and they've known about it and they've been told about it when they're on track. So they try and go even harder, try and pull 20 seconds out, and, you know, they're affecting the race that they're not eventually going to end up being involved in, if you know what I mean, on time.
Yeah.
And there's always loads of kind of permutations like that. And it's a bit of a weird one because I've never seen that penalty before anyway.
No, being docked three places from the time of the incident. I mean, I completely agree with, I think it was, I can't remember if it was yourself or Jack who said, surely that should be a black flag.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that should have been a black flag or a writer at least, you know, they've got to be a little bit careful because, you know, the last thing I want is to stop riders getting stuck in, you know, in a corner and having to go up passing and all that, because then you end up with a sterile championship that nobody wants to watch. But you know, by the same token, you want to make it as safe as you can. It's dangerous enough as it is. And, you know, to not come down sort of fairly heavily on people that are doing, you know, well, from what I saw, unprovoked, dangerous moves like that is, you know, they need to come on it, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. With the big boys, Max Biaggi continues to be able to put some pretty reasonable results together, and he's still, 48 points out in the lead. Marco Melandri seemed to be doing a fairly good impression, though. Lots of overtake, run wide, classic sort of Biaggi style, but it seems to be working for him as he goes into second place in the championship. But there's some pretty exciting races.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed for Tom Sykes, really. He lost second in the championship. I mean, a lot of it through the fact that he wasn't, although blindingly quick in Super Pole and 7/10 quicker than everybody else, which is, pardon me, unbelievable. He couldn't string it together in the race for whatever reason. I think the tyre issues and all that. But, you know, it got wiped out by Badovini from third place, and that cost him, it definitely cost him second in the championship, certainly after the first race. Anyway, so, you know, I felt a bit sorry for Tom. But yeah, you're dead right. Biaggi looks like the man that's going to take the stopping now, I've got to say.
And Carlos Checa doesn't seem to be getting it together the way he did so dominantly last year.
He doesn't. Bear in mind, Aragon was one of the places he crashed at last year, the only place he crashed at. So, you know, maybe it's not the place for him. Maybe he can come back strong, you know, in other rounds, but he needs to do it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, John, someone said the other day, if John Hopkins didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck, and that seems to be continuing, but Leon Camier along with him, that Suzuki looks fast on its day, but it doesn't seem to be able to reproduce it.
It looks fast, it looks to suit Camier as well when he's actually had a good run at it, but lots of issues, mechanical issues, electrical issues, they just never got a good kind of stab with any track time involved, and they never got a run at this weekend at all. So especially Hopkins, he had a lot of issues. So yeah, poor lad really.
Yeah, and it's strange that one, because you've got an incredibly experienced racing team there in Crescent Suzuki, and they just don't seem to be able to put together there what they were able to do for so many years in MotoGP.
No, it's true. I don't know. There's no answer to it. It's an experienced team. It's a really good team. I've worked with some of the boys in there, and there's nothing wrong with the way they go about it or the staff they've got. Maybe it is bad luck.
I mean, is Paul Denning involved directly with the team, or is he just overseeing it from a distance,
directly involved with it on a day-to-day basis at the meetings, not as much so, more administrative from, okay, but, you know, they've still got, you know, people who know what they're doing, you know, they've got a good team.
Yeah, and the only other thing is I was at Silverstone a couple of weeks ago, and lots of rumours going around that there were some factory teams making offers to MotoGP riders, but the factory teams were World Superbike teams. Nicky Hayden, supposedly, Andrea Dovizioso, and of course the rumour that won't go away is that Rossi might want to go over and be the first person to do both titles, and he gets a chance to beat up Max Biaggi again. Anything coming from the World Superbike end?
We've just about heard the same stuff, but nothing bumpy. It's kind of rumour and hearsay. But I'll tell you what, I'd like to see a bit of that.
I think Nicky Hayden would be very, very good. I mean, he's doing a pretty good job on
I think so, yeah, I think he would. I think, to be honest, most of the top MotoGP riders will be able to make the transition to Superbike reasonably easy, I think.
Yeah.
I think they would.
And I mean, I remember Julian Ryder saying at Silverstone last year on stage, stood next to Eugene Laverty when people were discussing his MotoGP prospects. Why would a MotoGP team manager employ someone who's regularly being beaten by MotoGP retirees? But, I mean, how long can Max and Carlos Checa and the like go on?
I mean, the whole point about World Superbike now is you've got two 40-odd-year-old, not in the case of Melander, but it's certainly the case of Checa and Biaggi, you've got two 40-odd-year-old MotoGP, not rejects, but certainly refugees, that are doing most of the winning, then Melander as well, you know, who you know, I don't know. It doesn't. On that sort of basis, you'd think that the level of competition, certainly at the front of MotoGP, had to be tighter. But there's a lot more involved than that. There's lots of factors. But yeah, you've got to say that any of the top MotoGP people could probably make the transition to Superbike with given the right bike.
Well, I wonder if you might see Colin Edwards back there, which would certainly be fun.
Yeah, he's the one that makes you think that, you know, I mean, he's the one that did reasonably well on both. I mean, he won Superbike, but he certainly didn't dominate it for years, and he did reasonably well in MotoGP, nearly winning one, and rostrums and all that. So he's the one that makes it look more, gives a bit more parity to the thing, really, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Super stuff. Okay, James, I won't keep you any longer. I know you're very busy, and I do appreciate you taking the time out for us. Thanks very much, and we will speak to you again soon.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, mate.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Thank you, Martin, by the way, for
absolutely
pulling this one together, because we kind of were like, hey, Jim, can you call James? And Jim, and you're like, what? Dude, I got to work.
Well, no, it's funny. I just replied to the email message and CC'd James. In it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, that's an interesting way to start. I'll let Martin and James take off with it. So, and it worked out just great. So,
thanks so much, Martin. And thanks so much, James.
Yeah, very cool. And I believe it is officially, Jules, probably July 4th now.
Yeah. Somewhere. Oh, two minutes. Right. And, I will not be doing the show next week because I'm going to be going to Italia. I'm going to be going to Mugello. Unfortunately, Sachsenring had to be canceled. My trip to Sachsenring had to be canceled due to family issues. And it was just a real bummer because it's such an incredibly awesome opportunity to be able to do those two rounds back to back.
Yeah.
They're only a week away. They're only about 9 hours worth of driving apart. And I was just basically going to go to the Sachsenring and drive down and meet my family down in Florence, but can't be done. There's been a, unfortunately, some shit going on. So yeah. I was able to salvage Mugello. So I will be going to Mugello, which is one of my bucket lists. I'll be able to cross that one off, and I'll spend the entire time there. And you and Martin will hold down the fort.
We will hold down the fort indeed. And looking forward to what you bring us. And just want to say thanks to the folks at Dorna for helping us get this thing worked out too.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Very cool.
Big shout out to those guys.
All right, Jules, let's see if we can wrap this thing up. Kind of a just joined a weekend partially because you and I have both been extremely busy and have had a lot of things on the plate, as well as an awful lot of racing to try and keep up with. So I do want to thank you guys out there, Jules, and if we're set here in Motopod land for downloading the show, having a listen. You can catch us on facebook.com/motopod or through motopodcast.com. Send us an email, write in, let us know what you're thinking. You guys are prodigious emailers and tweeters and Facebookers, and we dig it. Jules, I believe it is now officially July 4th, so if I had a firework to light off here in the house, I probably wouldn't do it. But in the meantime, we will talk to you guys all next week. Look forward to Sachsenring and anything else that comes our way. Sachsenring should be good, Jules. It'll be interesting to see if Mr. Pedrosa, 2010-2011, can pull something out of the hat. He really could use a win, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yep. This season, he can use a win. There's a bunch of people biting it at the sea.
Yeah, there's a bunch of sharks out there in the water. All right, guys. Yep. We will talk to you soon. Take care and move on. And Jules, have a great trip.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah.
Ciao. Right.
And then,
but then we hit. Yeah. I mean, dude, what are you doing?
Huh?
Oh, what are you doing?
Sorry, I was doing something. I was getting excited.